In 2010, a Swiss journalist flew to Afghanistan to report on the resurgence of tourism in the area. He didn't find the affluent tourism scene he was promised, but he did find a beautiful storybook set of mountains nestled in the valley outside of Bamiyan. It inspired Christopher Zerker to bring skiing to the region with the Afghan Ski Challenge competition. 9 years later, but before the Taliban takeover of the country, journalist Tim Neville flew to the region to see the men, women, and children of Bamiyan and the newly formed ski scene they'd been trying to create. Tim joins us now on Travel with Rick Steves to tell us what it was like to see young women flying down the mountain with world champion dreams, little boys on homemade skis dreaming of real skis, and how skiing brought light and laughter to Afghanistan, a region plagued by decades of war. Tim, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Rick. Absolute pleasure.
Wow, skiing in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
Would have thunk. Is there actually skiing in Afghanistan?
There's wonderful skiing in Afghanistan. Now, it's not Vail or Aspen or something like that. You have to hike up the mountains to earn your own turns, but the culture and the vibe is very much, well, it was very much alive.
Yeah, of course, it's tragic what's going on now, and that's kind of why we want to talk to you, is because I just really like to humanize Afghanistan. It's a country of millions of people living their lives just like we are, but they don't have the stability and, the affluence and the freedoms that we have. But we can be hopeful. Talk about your skiing experience, because you wrote about with a 16-year-old boy named Mahdi.
Yeah. So that was on the actual ski challenge day, which is a race. It's a two-day race that they hold. But around this race, there's a whole community that comes out to support it. And so it's about 50 boys now. When it first started, it was maybe 10 boys. Now it's about 50. And it also includes 15 women. And so for weeks before this event, they come out and they practice hiking up these hills, coming down these very challenging slopes. And so I went to not just watch the event and hang out with the various skiers, but to see this community and see how skiing has affected their lives.
Well, first of all, when my image of an Afghan person is not somebody with fancy boots and skis that release and goggles and all that, but do they have that kind of gear or is it kind of makeshift?
It's both. So something interesting has really happened. So when Christoph came over from Switzerland to start this thing, he came back with 500 pounds of luggage, including maybe 15 pairs of skis, because of course the Afghans didn't have anything like that. And so that was sort of the seed equipment, if you will. But then other equipment began to trickle in. For instance, when the Slovenians, when they were there as peacekeepers, when they left all of their old Elan skis. Elan is a Slovenian brand. Yeah. And so you see all these kids wearing old Slovenian gear. Or the most remarkable thing, though, Rick, is how just ingenious and creative these kids are, because there's far more interest than there is equipment. And so what they would do is they would go around and collect wood off of sheds or barn doors or whatever. Then they would use plastic that they had taken off of cooking canisters from Iran, because apparently that's the thickest plastic. It's this bright yellow plastic. And they would carve the skis, put this yellow plastic base on the bottom of them, and then literally nail their tennis shoes into the boards. And that would be what they would ski on. So it's just remarkable.
Now, Tim, would they hike up the mountain or would they have some kind of a lift?
Well, so both. Most of the time they would hike up because that's just what there is. I mean, there's no other way to do it, really. There was a ski lift of sorts, it sounds like, around the Kabul region, the capital, in the 60s. But it stopped running with the Soviet invasion in the late 70s. But then about 2 years ago or so, maybe 3 years ago or so, some crafty Afghans got together outside Bamiyan, so kind of in the central highlands there, and took a three-wheeled motorbike called a Zarang, wrapped a rope around one of the wheels, ran this rope maybe 500 feet up a small hill, and then that became a rope tow. And watching these kids use this was just absolutely incredible, because the guy sitting on the throttle would, you know, a skier would come up and say, okay, I'm ready, and hold on to this rope. And then the guy would hit the throttle like he was going to do a wheelie or something. And they would just rocket up this slope, just fly.
probably burning their hands or ruining their mittens.
Totally. The first time I saw it, I thought, oh man, their gloves have to just be smoked. And sure enough, when they came down, I looked and they had burns right through their gloves.
Oh, man. Well, I can kind of relate to that when I was a kid grabbing their rope toe, but I'm sure nothing like that. Tell us more about this Christopher Zerker. He's a Swiss journalist. He went back, what, 10 years in a row with this dream. And would it, little by little, he would bring gear and he would inspire locals to get on board. And tell me a little more about him.
Yeah, so really interesting guy, great guy. I got to hang out with him while I was over there. So he first came to Afghanistan, like you said, right when he thought tourism, it was about a decade after the Taliban had been overthrown. So he comes back, hears tourism's taking off, it's not happening. But he looks around, he sees all these mountains. And so he asks people, does anybody ski here? And the Afghans, the reply was always the same, no Sikhi, no Sikhi. So he thought, well, let's change this. So he came back. He was always just looking for a good story. So he came back thinking, oh, it'd be fun to teach the Afghans how to ski, maybe make some sort of a little event out of it, write a great story, and that'd be that. Well, he does just that, except the Afghans had very little interest in actually skiing, because think about it, if you spend your life walking around in the mountains tending sheep and livestock or whatever, you're not going to want to, why are you going to go spend your holiday or your free time walking around in the mountains again? So he convinces a few of them to do it, and then they just get absolutely ridiculed. Like the entire villages would come out and watch these guys flailing around and laugh and laugh and laugh and laugh. So he decides to create an actual event with actual prizes. And so that sort of makes things a little bit more serious. And long story short, the story runs, and he gets quite a bit of criticism for this when it runs in Switzerland. People are saying, look, Afghanistan is this place of immeasurable suffering. There's just war. Why in the world would you go there and just kind of do this like little funny side story, that, you know, this lark almost? And he kind of bristled at that. He's like, wait a minute, look at our society.
We can have some fun. Yeah.
Exactly. Like our whole society is built, it seems like, on distraction. So even if things are terrible, why not be able to step out and have some fun?
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Tim Neville, and he's written an article about skiing in Afghanistan and a Swiss journalist's dogged attempt and work in creating what sounds like potentially a wonderful area to ski in. And he created the Afghan Ski Challenge. Tim, can you explain the Afghan Ski Challenge? What events do they have?
So the actual challenge itself is a two-day event. It starts off with the women's slalom event. Now, that alone is something remarkable, because when this first began, there were no women really allowed to do this. And slowly that began to change. And then finally, it was just, they're like, of course the women can do this. And so, and that created a whole nother universe, let's say, of women sports and activities and programs to teach confidence and so on. So the first event is the women's slalom event, where they would hike up a slope that the boys would prepare just by side-slipping their skis. There's no grooming machines. So they would just go up and slide down and create a slope. And then they put flags in it and they would have to ski around them. And so when the women would ski, there would be like hundreds of villagers that would come out and watch, and there was no laughing this time. I mean, of course, there was laughing and fun, but not as like ridiculing. When women would come down, they would, you know, maybe one would fall and she'd get back up and just determine to make it down to the bottom, and the crowd would just go crazy. Oh, fairy, oh, fairy, oh, fairy, which is sort of like, great job. You know, another woman, she came down and they're all wearing headscarves. It's still a very traditional society. But one woman coming down and her scarf comes off and the crowd just goes crazy. And I look at this other guy next to me and kind of like, oh my God, is this okay? And he's like, oh, scandalous. Totally joking.
And yeah, and the women were empowered by this. I love how you write, 18-year-old Nazima said, skiing taught me I can take care of myself. And she became the first Afghan woman to win a medal in an international ski competition in Pakistan.
That's true. And that was also the very first time she'd ever been on a proper ski lift. And so for her, that was almost just as exciting.
And then Nazira, you wrote about, 17 years old, and she says, happiness is mine to make. What a beautiful thing to give people this opportunity to just have a break from the drudgery of their life and feel the rough and tumble joy of hitting those moguls and the wind and the cheers of the crowds, and especially women on the slope.
That was the real joy of going there, Rick, is skiing, yes, is fun, but it was everything else that the sport was doing for these locals, for these people there, that just was so touching. And honestly, it was an easy way in for someone like me, an American who yeah. doesn't know the first thing really about Afghanistan. Here was this thing we shared in common, and right. we could sort of relate over that.
Now, Tim, Bamiyan, it's like north of Kabul, right? It was in the news because of the Taliban bombing of the big Buddhas there.
It's to the west of Kabul.
West of Kabul, that's right. How far west? And tell us about Bamiyan in general, because hippies used to go there back in the 70s, too.
Bamiyan was very popular back in the 60s and early 70s with the hippies who had come through. It was a very spiritual, just cosmic kind of place. And on the northern edge of the city, there are these sandstone cliffs, and there were these two giant Buddhas, about 180 feet tall, carved in the 6th, 7th century AD, something like that. Hmm. This was sort of the westernmost fringes of Buddhism, I believe. Then, yeah, in 2001, the Taliban came through and just blew them up. And I remember asking people, I was like, well, how did you feel about when they did that? And they're like, we were worried about food. We were worried about not getting murdered. So they had much bigger things to worry about. But it really was a loss for humanity.
It's a fascinating part of Afghanistan. And could you imagine it in some future time when they've got freedom and a reasonable economy as a skier's Shangri-La? I mean, it just sounds like a beautiful potential for skiing in that part of the world.
Well, it's a very dangerous thing, in my opinion, to give up on hope, but it does seem fairly bleak at the moment, I think, which is terrible because the potential there is just outstanding. These are these beautiful, the Koi Baba mountain range and the Hindu Kush mountain range. I mean, these are major, major mountains with just limitless skiing. In the summertime, you have a nearby national park. It's this series of six blueberry lakes with natural travertine dams. There's hiking, there's all sorts of like horseback riding, there's even mountain biking now. So it really is, you could see it being a four-season destination. If it were anywhere else in the world, it'd be like a Switzerland, really.
You know, I just think it is so important to remember the potential for joy in a community or in a society like Afghanistan, considering the very difficult and tragic times they're in right now. Describe the joie de vivre, just the fun-loving, vibrant vibe of the skiers back in the good times before the Taliban victory.
Well, I can tell you one quick story about my experience there, and that was one of the very first days I was there. We skied up, you hike up with special equipment up to this ridge and then drop down into another valley to a little village called Jarwazi. And there, our guide, this guy named Ali Shah, comes out. He says, okay, just hang on. I guarantee you the whole village will come out. And so we're just sitting there on a rock. And sure enough, like all of a sudden, this one kid shows up and he's got a pair of homemade skis. And then another kid shows up. He's got a pair of homemade skis. And then another and another and another. And next thing you know, we're surrounded by like 15 kids. And they're all just so excited that we're there. They're like playing in the snow, running up and down. There's little kids like just sliding on those Iranian cooking oil canisters.
You know, there's a pent-up passion for skiing here. I think if the times were right, you unleash all of that desire to ski that you can see in the homemade ramshackle gear, it could be amazing.
Oh, absolutely. There's something very intuitive about just playing and sliding around on snow. Yeah, so we just took turns. Like I would step out of my equipment and they'd stick their bare feet right in my boots and just go and laugh and giggle. And for a moment, Rick, it was like, wow, everything is just
life is
normal
good.
Here. Yes, exactly.
Tim Neville's our guest from his home studio in Bend, Oregon right now on Travel with Rick Steves. Tim's an avid skier who frequents Mount Bachelor and has written about his adventures in more than 70 countries on all seven continents. He writes for Outside Magazine and the New York Times, and has won Lowell Thomas Awards for his travel articles. You'll find more of his articles at timneville.net. You know, Tim, we just have a short time left, but of course, 2021, Bamiyan fell the day before Kabul to the Taliban, and it sounds like you've got a lot of friends in Bamiyan. What is the plight of these people now? Are they still there? Have they escaped? Is there anything left of the Bamiyan Ski Club?
Yeah, it's quite tragic. So every day I get messages through Facebook or WhatsApp. Some have escaped, like the women skiers, a lot of them have escaped to Rome, Malaysia, some are here in the US. Some of the other skiers have ended up also in France, New Zealand, I believe. They're scattered, but there are quite a few who are still stuck in Bamiyan, and they're literally prisoners in their own homes. They don't feel safe to go out.
Is the Taliban anti-sports?
Yes, exactly. They're very, yes, that's it exactly.
Just anti-sports, anti-laughing.
Yeah, I can't speak for them, obviously, but it would very much seem that way.
39 million Afghans living now under the Taliban. Can you, with your intimacy, really, with that culture, of course there's cons because of the end of the war, but are there any pros because of the end of the war?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Before we skied down into that village where all the boys came out with their homemade skis, I was sitting on a ridge with my guide, and we were cracking walnuts just talking. And one of the things he was saying was, if peace is going to come to Afghanistan, it's going to be on Afghan terms. There's no foreign power that's going to be able to come in and impose peace. It's entirely up to them. Mm-hmm. So I guess if there's anything positive that can be said about this is, well, maybe here's their shot.
Tim Neville, it's been so great to be able to kind of just vicariously imagine the people, the humanity of Afghanistan. I'm so thankful that people like you have been there and can know these people other than the tragic news stories that we have to look at. Tell us one intimate moment that you cling to that gives you hope that there really is that spark and that joy that can survive the nightmare they're going through right now.
So on one of the last days I was there, we skied down into another village. And as we're walking back to our vehicle, this little boy comes walking out and he says, "Amu, Amu," which is a term of endearment. It means uncle. And he's talking to our guide. And he says, "Uncle, Uncle, is today the day you have found us real skis?" And my guide, Ali Shah, he says, "No, I'm sorry, not today." But what Ali Shah didn't know was that my daughter, who was about their same age, had just outgrown her skis, and I had brought them over. So I gave them to Ali Shah. I was like, look, you know, I didn't want to hand those over to him, to the kids. I thought he should do that. Weeks later, I get this picture from him, and there is this little kid wearing my daughter's skis with the boots and the poles. And so at night sometimes, Rick, I like to think that kid is out there enjoying those skis, enjoying just being a kid, just enjoying gravity, enjoying playing on snow, because honestly, who doesn't love that?
Tim Neville, you are a good example of how one traveler can make a difference in this world. Travel, it brings people together in so many beautiful ways. Thank you for reporting on the Bamiyan Ski Club. And let's hope we've got some skiing in Afghanistan in the not too distant future. Thanks, Tim.
Thank you so much for having me, Rick.
A few years ago, Tim Neville told us about the unlikely ski resorts he found in Kosovo and North Korea. You can hear that interview at ricksteves.com/radio. Listeners share their own memorable travel adventures next at 877-333-RICK.